Living on the road is like living in a bubble, where all you're surrounded by are like-minded people who live a little outside of the lines themselves. No matter how much that may be your world, that's not the real world. Once I come down off the hypercloud that is the rock and roll rocket and settle back into the real world, I am quickly reminded that there's more of them than us. Almost immediately, that Black Flag song, My War, starts playing in my head. You're one of them. I can't believe you. You're one of them, etc., etc. Until the pull of the next tour takes me. Full disclosure, there have been times on our travels where I've been in a room full of people under the rock and roll umbrella and realized that I have nothing in common with anyone present. It's a lonely feeling since the lure of community was what brought me here in the first place. Often, even within rock and roll, it's hard to find people with whom you jive. So, when I do meet like-minded people, where we register with each other on the same wavelength, I recognize it, I preserve it, and hold it in high esteem. That is how I feel like when it comes to David Vincent. I met David via the phone, if you can believe it, back in 2007. We were playing a show at the Ink and Iron Festival in Long Beach, California, and Jen Vincent, his wife at the time from the Jenna Torturers, happened to come out to see us. She immediately put me on the phone with David, and from there, our friendship was struck. Soon after that first conversation on the phone, we were lucky enough to play Tampa Bay, and Jen and David would come out to see us. And afterwards, we'd hang out, and as someone who usually doesn't hang out with people, I found it really comfortable and easy to hang out with David, and for hours. We had shared interests, and I remember talking about Alice Cooper, Anton LaVey, and Ric Flair with David. So yes, we had shared interests. And who is David Vincent? Well, Evil D, as he is also known, was the lead singer and bassist for the legendary Tampa Bay death metal band Morbid Angel. The first four albums he played on, Altars of Madness, Blessed Are the Sick, Covenant, and even Domination, are considered death metal masterpieces, A, B, C, and D. When David left Morbid to devote more time to the Jenna Torturers, Morbid Angel carried on, but no one could deny they lost the charisma that David naturally carried with him as frontman. When he rejoined Morbid Angel years later and released the very controversial Illud Divinum Insanus, that pretty much marked the end of his stay with Morbid Angel and officially left in 2015. The one thing that strikes me when I think of David Vincent today is his adherence to the left-hand path. He's not a man to follow convention, do what's expected, or buckle under pressure. He goes where his passion takes him. These days, he's entered the world of country music, or more specifically, outlaw country music. With his magnificent signature death metal growl, something that is not easy to pull off, one may immediately raise an eyebrow at this new endeavor. But David managed to cross that bridge with relative ease. If you haven't heard him singing country, just listen to the timbre of his speaking voice. Deep, calm, almost soothing. And that's how it comes out of his mouth when he starts to sing. I must be perfectly honest here and admit that I was quite surprised when I first heard him sing country. Surprised at how natural his voice blended in with the music after hearing him growl for all these years in Morbid Angel, one of the most brutal bands that ever existed. I've been trying to get David on the podcast for quite some time, but it makes sense that it took a while. He's more than super busy with his outlaw country music, his I Am Morbid metal band touring around, and just a week before this podcast episode happened, it was announced that he had become the newest member of the Headcat with Slim Jim Phantom and Danny B. Harvey, replacing the one and only Lemmy Kilmister on vocals and bass. Big boots to fill, but if there was anyone who could do Lemmy proud, David Vincent would be the only name in the hat for me. So on the 28th anniversary of the release of Altars of Madness, I talked to David Vincent. It was fun to ask him questions about him. He's such a great conversationalist. I don't think I've ever had the chance to turn the tables around and ask him about himself. I had a lot of fun doing this. I admire David Vincent so much that there are only maybe 5 people in the world who can make me drink, break edge, to be as cool as they are, and David Vincent is one of those people. He is the man. So I would like to say thanks to Blue Mic Microphones and Skull Candy Headphones for their support of the podcast with the mics and the headphones they've supplied. Thank you for listening to this episode, and thanks to all who have left a rating or a review on iTunes. We're at 100% positive feedback on there, so thank you, thank you. Here's my talk with the one and only Evil D, David Vincent, on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Danko's co-host. Cool. Hello for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes. Jimmy in from fucked up. Stop playing. Hang down. I began to notice that Danko was completely nuts. He'd suddenly start making weird sounds and scary faces for no reason at all. And it wasn't just embarrassing, it was alarming. And now, since I'm a devout Catholic, I asked my local parish priest about Danko's condition, and he was sure Danko was possessed by Satan. So I helped my priest perform an exorcism on Danko that very day, but it didn't work. The dude is seriously screwed, and according to my parish priest, will burn in hell for all of eternity if he doesn't get himself checked out. There's only one podcast to listen to in this world, and that's the Danko Jones Podcast. Don't be a dick. Don't be an ass. Just listen to the Danko Jones Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get ready, because the Danko Jones Podcast starts now.
Howdy, howdy.
Hey, David. How you doing, man?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
Good. So you're out in Los Angeles right now?
Yep.
And I'm going to assume that it's for Headcat.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. For I Am Morbid.
Oh, man. You know, that's the thing is, leading up to me talking to you today, I just didn't know where to start.
I don't know where to start either. I'm reeling, man. I'm definitely got a whole bunch of irons in the fire right now.
Yeah, it seems to me, just from watching from the sidelines, you're peaking right now. I mean, it's just overload with so many projects. It's a very enviable position to be in.
Well, unless you're as ADD as I am, and you have, you know, trouble sort of differentiating at times between one another. But no, I'm not complaining at all. I'm enjoying every one of them.
Yeah. Cause I mean, it took a while to get this, talk going with you. And now it's very clear why. There's just so many things that you have to do. And it's actually getting announced monthly. There's a new thing that's huge every month, practically. Like last week, the Headcat thing just kind of, I think, really blew everyone away in a good way, I think.
Well, I mean, listen, we got together. I don't know if everybody knows this. I have a little outlaw country thing that I do as well, and the guitar player is Danny. So Danny and I worked together, and he had mentioned to me, he said, "Hey, man, like, what would you think about, you know, trying something with Headcat, you know, get Slim down here and go in the studio and cut a few tracks?" And I said, "Yeah, it actually sounds like it could be a whole lot of fun." I'd never met, I think I'd met Jim before, not in any official capacity, probably just a drive-by backstage somewhere over the years. And we got in, and gosh, we rehearsed for a day and cut a few tracks the next day, and it came out really neat. So we're garnering some attention and some anticipation on that.
I gotta tell you, I'm a big Stray Cats fan.
As am I.
Yeah.
As am I.
Well, you joining Headcat, I mean, it makes perfect sense to me. I mean, in terms of the lineage that precedes you and just from the genre that Lemmy was from and how you, you know, you're both bass players. You both front very powerful, heavy, loud outfits. It's a position almost carved out for you as well. Like it's also a hard person to replace, but I mean, it makes sense. If there's anyone, it would have to be you.
Well, listen, I mean, I'll go on record right now. I mean, there's no way to replace Lemmy. That's not possible.
Right.
You know, he's a one of a kind guy. And I sound nothing like him, but, I'm a hard guy to replace too, and I'm a one-of-a-kind guy. So it's going to be, it's definitely interesting. It's definitely going to, it's different than it was. I mean, the intent is still loud rock and roll. I probably bring a few different types of things to the table. And, you know, the guys seem really jazzed about it. Like I said, the initial recordings that we did came out really neat, in my opinion. I've never done anything like that before. So this is kind of walking in. It's like, okay, well, you know, here we go, guys. Let's see how it sounds.
Again, watching you from the sidelines, from what, you know, the rumblings of what you've been doing from like a year and a half back, it's very inspiring because you seem like to the outside world, you know, there's the David Vincent that everybody knows. But, you know, having met you and having hung out with you and, you know, us having our talks and stuff, I know you from a very different angle. So when I heard that you had started this Outlaw Country project, now joining Headcat, moving to Austin and doing what you're doing, it made perfect sense to me. But it's also inspiring that you do this despite what, you know, whatever anybody says in the kind of rigid world of heavy metal. And that's very admirable. I really dig it. I really love how you're just, it's a very quiet, quiet middle finger to everybody.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if it's all that quiet, but listen, I mean, this is no different than I do what I want to. I figure at my age, I've spent enough time on this planet to earn the right to do whatever the heck I want to do. And, you know, I've got people that love it and people that hate it. There's not many in between. There's not many people. Well, I don't know. I mean, people, and this has been, kind of the whole, my story for, you know, since way back when, and some people get it, some people don't. And that's all good and well, you know, there's things that I don't like either. So, you know, everybody can either get on board or not. It doesn't matter, because if I enjoy it, it starts there. And I don't do things that I don't like.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I think everybody knows that. Just hearing you speak, if nobody is familiar with, you know, Morbid Angel or you know, the Outlaw Country project that you have going, they can hear it in your voice, in the timbre of your voice, the tone of your voice, the level of your voice. And when you say that you're doing country, I think people can actually bridge that voice to the genre and go, you know what? I think that voice sounds like it can really do well in country. And this whole outlaw perspective, like outlaw country, that's a perfect voice for that. A great tradition of Johnny Cash. And when I heard some of the songs that have been uploaded on YouTube, because you've only released a 7-inch so far?
Correct.
Yeah, when I heard those songs, like in that bar, it made perfect sense. Like it does sound very natural for you to start singing in this way. But as a singer myself, the first question that came to my mind was, what are you doing differently pre-show? And I don't know if you've toured any extensively with this with these projects, but what has changed with your voice singing this way?
Well, I mean, obviously I'm not screaming. You know, Headcat is probably an in between the two. But, you know, with the country thing, I'm just, you know what it is, man? So I moved to Texas. I mean, I had a number of life changes that happened to me in a very short period of time. And when I got to Texas, I just kind of gave into it. I said, you know what? I really like this. You know, I like the culture. I like the entirety of it, the good and the bad, because that's what makes it just, you know, a great place to live for me. And in doing so, I mean, there's certainly in the Austin area, it arguably is probably, you know, some of the best musicians in the world, and lots of them. And I just started, you know, creating new circles. I mean, I didn't know people, a whole lot of people that live there. And I met a few people and started running, you know, introducing myself to different people and finding myself up on stage, getting called up on stage. Hey, you want to go sing a song? Yeah, sure, why not? And it just kind of one thing led to the next. So it's just a continuation of anything that I've ever done. I mean, it's a, you know, I'm still telling stories. I'm just telling them a little bit differently, but it's still my story.
How did you end up hooking up with Danny B. Harvey? Is that how just networking in the scene?
No, you know what? So, we have done some stuff during South by Southwest for many years. This little side thing that I do, you know, putting some stuff together for some, usually with some charitable component to it. And Danny played at this kind of private party that we had one year. And that's where I met him. And we started talking, and he's like, oh, yeah. And I had never met him before, but we knew a lot of the same people. And you know, he's like, yeah, this guy. And I kind of was like, wow, man, surprised it. I don't know. We just started talking, and one day I said, you know, we had a jam one day, Danny. He said, yeah, I'd like that. And we did. And we just, you know, he came over to my house for a couple of days, and after several bottles of tequila and a couple of acoustic guitars sitting around a campfire, we came up with a whole slew of stuff. So, it was very, very natural, very organic. And, yeah.
It seems to me that Austin is a city that draws musicians with many interests to it. The people that I know in Austin have different projects. Like, there's, I don't know if you've met him being in the city there, but Jason McMaster.
Yeah, I don't know him, but I know of him. I think I've met him before, but I don't know him.
He's got his metal projects, and he's got his rock and roll projects. Then there's Gordy mm-hmm. Johnson, who's from Canada in a band, Big Sugar. And he's like, mm-hmm. he does his rock stuff and he does his reggae stuff. So, mm-hmm. And they're all drawn to Austin because it's such an open city for that. But aside from South by Southwest, it just seems to draw a lot of musicians to it. And I'm just wondering.
No, in my view, there is a magic to the area, to the culture, to the just all. I mean, Central Texas in general has a very interesting history, and you know, in the middle of you know, I mean, it's the state capital, but it's also it's almost, dare I say, the San Francisco of Texas with the Texas flair.
Right. Okay.
It had, you know, like if you think back in the 60s and, you know, like sort of what was going on mm-hmm. in, you know, the sort of like the Haight-Ashbury district in San Francisco, there's a parallel, albeit a Texas style parallel. I mean, there's kind of, I don't know. I mean, it's a great place. I don't want to make it sound too good because, you know, so many people are moving there now. There's a lot of folks moving in because, you know, they come in and there's some article that said, hey, you know, this is one of the best places to live in the world. And I agree,
yeah.
But I don't want to encourage more people to come. Because, you know, the traffic is just going to look like LA after a while.
So. Right. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I've been down there for South by, three times, I think. And I do wish that I would go there when there's no South By happening. It seems to me that the natives scatter when South By Southwest just takes over.
Because of the traffic and because everybody, all the hotels get very proud of their prices, and it's not the easiest place to function unless you kind of really have a good plan. And people come down and gosh, they spend thousands and thousands of dollars just on a hotel or an Airbnb or whatever just to stay there. And you know, I mean, I know people that own houses. And they literally move out of their houses for that basically 2-week period.
Yeah.
And the revenue that they generate pays their mortgage for the entire year. I mean, it's insane. But it's a cool thing. It's a really cool conference. There's a lot of innovation, a lot of tech innovation, a lot of film innovation, lots and lots of music. But the music never stops. I mean, there on any given night, and this is a challenge that I find myself in quite a bit, if I were to go to every show that I either have friends who are playing or that I should go from a genuflection industry standpoint or something that I'd like to see that I haven't seen before, I'd be out every night of the week and sometimes flipping a coin between checking out a few songs at one venue and then going to another one, because there's literally hundreds of venues with live music happening 24/7, 365.
Yeah.
And that's a cool thing. In some ways, I mean, it keeps salaries probably lower than they would be elsewhere, because there's so many people. Well, you know, if you don't play for a couple hundred bucks, we can get this other guy, and there's always somebody standing in line to, you know, because it's people would probably rather play than not play. But the quality and the talent and the diversity of talent from any different kind of music, be it metal, rock, country, blues, lots of really good blues, even some of the urban stuff, I mean, which is not my forte, but I mean, there are a lot of notable artists of any and every genre that call the Austin area home. So.
Yeah, it's kind of like a New York City, like New York City's kind of like that. Whenever I go to New York City, I look in the Village Voice and it's like, well, there's five shows going on tonight that we could easily go, so we have to pick one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite interesting.
But it's better to have too many choices than not enough, right, Nico?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So is that what originally made you choose Austin when you moved out of Tampa, or was that a choice to go to Austin, or was it like
it was definitely a choice to go there? Like I said, after being there for several years for South By, just looking around, I said,
right.
You know,
okay,
like I'd really like to, like I really like it here. I like the topography, I like the cuisine, I like the attitude. You know, it's almost like what's not to like,
right?
So I've made some very, very dear friends in the 3 short years that I've been there, and I don't foresee ever wanting to leave.
Now we're talking. You're in LA. I'm in Toronto, and you're in LA. You just flew in to do this. I thought it was Headcap, but it's I Am Morbid. Now that's right. That's another project that's just been started. That's you know, gaining ground and people are talking about, and the one thing I love about what you're doing, you know, at the same time, simultaneously, parallel of each other, is you're doing metal, but you're also, because one of the criticisms I have about heavy metal fans is the rigidness and just how close-minded sometimes they can be, and it's more with the younger people, but I love when metal guys, like really known metal guys, branch out into other genres, like you know, Bill Steer does, you know, Firebird and mm-hmm. Gentleman's Pistols, and there's Michael Amott, they do Carcass and they do all their rock stuff, and mm-hmm. You know, Bjorn Strid from Soilwork does Night Flight Orchestra, and you're mm-hmm. doing this outlaw country project, and you're so known for Morbid Angel, and now you're doing I Am Morbid, so you're continuing in the metal world. Like, I think a lot of people thought you had left, but you're still doing metal, and that's very encouraging, I think, and comforting to know that you're still playing all the Morbid Angel stuff.
Well, you know what it is. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I used to be, you know, one of those people that was very rigid about what I listened to, and if it wasn't a certain thing, I didn't want to know about it. And probably the more time I spent on the planet, I just started saying, well, you know, it made me feel small to only have, you know, one option. And you know, I'd sit in, you know, you rub shoulders with all kinds of folks as you go around and tour and stuff, and people, hey, you want to jam on this and jam on? I'm like, I would, but gosh, I don't know any of those songs. And I started, well, why the hell don't I know any of those songs? I should. And I just made it a point one day to be like, all right, I don't want to be that way anymore. So I opened myself up to some things that probably I, you know, listened to when I was a little kid. And I've rediscovered, you know, some of the old, you know, 70s rock and stuff that inspired me when I was, you know, 6 and 7 years old. So at least that's my story.
Does that mean that maybe there's a rock project in the future? There's now the Rockabilly project. And
no, well, I would say Headcat is that.
Yeah. Okay.
At least go, because it's close enough to, you know, where I'm already feeling, that, you know, I think that's what makes it a good fit.
And with Headcat, you guys are doing new Headcat songs that you are writing in on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So because it's still with Danny B. Harvey, and you guys have collaborated on your own solo stuff, is there going to be some, like, is there some crossover there? Like, how do you differentiate between the two projects with the two of you?
So, all right. So, number one in my country project, I play guitar.
Okay.
So, this, you know, Headcat, I'm back to bass and vocals, which is, you know, something that's very comfortable. Yeah, I mean, that's comfortable. I'm comfortable with any of it.
Yeah.
But no, we talked about that, and Danny said, hey, you know, maybe we could do, you know, some of these songs, because, you know, just make them a little bit louder. I like the fact that there's a differentiation between all these different things. Mm. I mean, you know, you know, you're not going to hear a rock and roll or a country version of Maze of Torment, for example. It's not appropriate.
Right.
Cause I enjoy keeping the purity and the integrity of the different things. I like mashing stuff up. I mean, some of the stuff we do is definitely, with Headcat is, you know, it's much louder and it's much more aggressive than, you know, than probably it would be under, you know, other circumstances. But, you know, that's what makes it fun. Mm. But not, you know, I wouldn't ask Slim Jim to play a blast beat.
Right.
He'd probably look at me like, you know, what's this guy's problem, you know?
Right.
It'd right. probably be difficult to do standing up too.
Yeah, right. Oh, wow. That is exciting. You guys have yet to play a gig yet, or are you guys still practicing, or?
We are, our first gigs are, about 5 days after I get back from Europe with I Am Morbid.
Holy cow. So it's just one new project after the other. Like, you are at the really gestation period of like three projects at the same time.
Well, when we first started discussing doing this podcast, I wasn't blowing you off. I mean, I wouldn't do that to you, but I'm just like, man, look, give me a minute, and let me just get a few more things, you know, under control, so that I have some additional things to talk about.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So that, you know, you by you being patient gave us a little bit more subject matter to discuss, which I couldn't discuss previously.
Yeah, I mean, when the Headcat thing came out, I was like, oh, wow, okay, yeah. I get it.
But we had all decided, you know, we had like a little pact between us that we just weren't going to talk about it. So nobody knew.
Yeah, I mean, when it came out, there's already a promo shot with the band, so you guys had this in the works and everything. I mean,
yeah, we took that actually at the studio the day that we were recording.
Wow.
So.
Wow, there's just so much on the go. It's amazing. I mean,
it's fun.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
I can feel that off you too. Like I can really feel that off you. You know, watching you do the Outlaw Country stuff, I could really feel it. That this is something that, you know, you're sinking your teeth into and enjoying it. That's why I say it's in an enviable position, because I think there's a lot of people who are, you know, sometimes doing music, but it's like, I wish I could be doing this thing too, but you're doing it all. So it's really exciting to watch somebody like just get off on everything that they want to do. And it's fun because, you know, having known you now for all these years, I really, I'm excited for you. That's kind of what I want to say.
Well, I appreciate that, Danko. I mean, you know that I'm a fan of yours as well. So, I mean, it's nice when things come together for everybody, right?
Yeah, I'm a big booster. I'm waiting in the wings to hear all the projects. And I genuinely really do like the Outlaw Country stuff you're doing. I will be the first to say I'm not a country music fan, but the second thing I say is, but I like Johnny Cash. And I like Willie Nelson.
Now listen, okay. So here's the thing: a fellow like Johnny Cash, arguably, just went beyond his genre. I mean, I don't know anybody that doesn't like him. I mean, my folks like him, my grandparents liked him, metal people like him, country people like him, rock people like him. You know, there's just a certain attitude. You get at a point where it's not really necessarily a definable genre. It's just that, you know, here's this amazing artist that has an amazing life story and that did a lot of things. And, you know, I mean, truthfully, a lot of these more, old school country guys, I mean, they've lived lives that are, you know, that could compete with, you know, some of the stories that I have to tell,
right,
in their own way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and it's, you know, there's a lot of parallels that just, you know, they just weren't necessarily metal people.
So. Yeah. I mean, and there's things about, you know, Johnny Cash, whether it's his image or the story behind him, that lends itself to a fan base of people who like the dark side of things. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, so I see it. I see when you call what you're doing outlaw country, it's a very important word to put before the word country, because I get it. When I hear you say outlaw country, or when it's billed as that, I understand where you're coming from. And knowing your past and where you're coming from personally, like, yeah, that's the bridge that someone who's a Morbid Angel fan, who knows you from Morbid Angel, can make to go, okay, I get it. You know, he's not making a complete break. This isn't like, you know,
no, not at all.
Yeah,
not at all.
There is something that you can associate with what you did with Morbid Angel and what you're doing with the country project. So it makes total sense.
I believe that too. Now, musically, it's entirely different, but it's way more roots oriented. But you know, the stories are, you know, I mean, that really is a story of my life. You know, I've always been, you know, amongst the ostracized. I've always been the one who traveled the road less traveled, and that's made all the difference.
And that's the bigger story, is that's what a lot of heavy metal fans are, that's the reason why we're all drawn to heavy metal, is because we're all outsiders. And then watching you do it, that's why I have this innate, you know, kind of sense to cheer you on. Because you are walking this road that I haven't seen a lot of people walk. I mean, I will say Lemmy is probably the only guy I've seen do this, you know, forcefully and proudly, the way you're doing it now with all these different projects.
Yeah, well, he definitely did a lot of different things. I mean, obviously, you know, Motorhead is Motorhead.
Yeah, yeah.
But he did a lot of interesting collaborations, you know, over the years. And, you know, yeah, I think it's cool. I mean, he was a trailblazer, and, you know, there's probably a lot of similarities, you know, from an attitude standpoint that came out of him and that, you know, that come out of me and come out of many people.
Mm-hmm. To get away from the music for a second, now you've got all these things going on, but there's even more in terms of the animated film that you voiced, the cameos you've made in movies and stuff like that, the zombie movie.
Have you seen that, by the way?
No, I haven't. I've just seen the trailer. Is that out?
He's doing like film festivals and stuff like that, and working on probably some, you know, direct distribution thing, or make, you know, like an Amazon type thing, or one of these deals. So he's actually become a good friend of mine too. He asked myself and Randy Blythe from Lamb of God to just do like a quick cameo for him in this movie. I met him and he said, "Hey man, would you guys, you know, I'm making this strange film." And I actually went to, he had a showing last Halloween that I went to, and that was the first time that I actually saw the movie in its complete form. And you know, I'm a horror fan. I'm a fan of a lot of the trauma stuff, a lot of the B sort of quote unquote B movie exploitation type stuff that's, you know, H.G. Lewis and et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this, there's just enough humor in it, and the story is like, I was very entertained. I watched it and I'm like, man, at the end of the night, I just walked over to him. I was like, yeah, good job, man. It really, you know, it was fun. I mean, it was just such a quick cameo.
Right.
But in exchange for that, he said, hey, I'd like to make some music videos for you. And I'll do it at more reasonable than anyone else would. And it did. I want to work with you and, you know, tell you thanks for doing these cameos. So I've actually shot two music videos for the country thing, which will be out as soon as I can get a couple of things sort of clamped down. They'll be out soon. And, you know, one's a little more sort of basic. One's actually really, it's really fun. Exactly what I wanted to do.
Drinking with the Devil?
With the Devil.
Yeah. And how about Buyer Beware? That's the other song.
Yep. And yeah. So we have videos. So my goal is to do videos for every song.
Hmm. Okay.
It's going to get expensive, but it's just, you know, that's what I want to do from an artistic standpoint.
There's lyric videos now that are pretty popular. People are doing. We did one.
Yeah.
That's if you want to just get every single song, you know, with the video.
So kind of what it is, you know, folks can come see you play live, and that's one rendition. Another rendition is actually listening to a studio cut. The third rendition is being able to perform in a way that, you know, that film can bring different, sort of like a different perspective to a song. So you say, hey, you know, this is the kind of vibe that I want to have here. Something that you wouldn't be able to recreate that vibe necessarily on stage without, you know, ridiculous amounts of sets and what have you.
Right.
So I've always looked at videos as just being one additional way to, of a conveyance of emotion or vibe that you could put to a song that is another dimension from someone coming to see you live or someone listening to a recording.
And that's how it's been with you since the early Morbid days too. I mean,
oh yeah,
that's how you, yeah. I mean, whether people ended up seeing it cause it got censored or whatever is another thing, but that's where you guys were at, I'm assuming.
Well, that's what I've always thought was important. I mean, you know, having a video that's nothing more than just sort of the band in a room playing a song, you know, maybe with some flashing lights or whatever. I mean, listen, it takes all types. I've always liked stuff that had a little bit more concept to it, to where you could add, again, some elements and some vibe and some intent to something that, you know, it allows you to do these things. We had some really good Morbid Angel videos back in the day when there were major labels just throwing money at everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So we were fortunate to be included in some of that.
We did a video for a new single, and it's got a vampire vibe to it. And it was done. We just let our buddy do it, and he animated it and everything. It's all animated, shot from first person point of view. I could send you a kind of a link to it, a YouTube link. But you should check it out if you're going to do a video for every one.
I would. I don't know that I would go animated with the country stuff, but that could be. Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see what you've done. I mean, that sounds interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, if the goal is to get all these songs videos with, it might be a cool, all inexpensive as well, you know, way to do it. And I think
nothing's inexpensive. I mean, we spend lots of money, we don't make so much. So yeah. it's a lot of this. I mean, honestly, is really a labor of love. I mean, you hope it'd be nice if you can recoup at least your expenses, but it's one more thing that you've done that you're proud of that you put out there and you can share it with folks.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you did the Realm of the Damned with Danny Filth.
Yeah.
How did you get involved with that thing? Like, there's so many projects, David. It's just a lot.
Yeah, I know. Well, I was introduced to the producers of this by a good friend and business associate. And they had someone else in mind. And we had a little Skype meeting, video Skype. And after about a half an hour of discussing, gosh, you know, everything under the sun, they had a meeting. They said, we really want you to do this. We think that you're the right person to do this. So I said, oh, great. And we got together and I flew over to London and we recorded it there with the director. You know, it's a little strange because, you know, they have a vision of how they're putting stuff together. And since you're not actually acting, you're trying to give life to an animated character. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it was someone who, it was a character that would be very troubled character. A Christian warrior who is a murderer and also a junkie, because in order for him to live, he had to, you know, feed on a serum that was made from the blood of the very people that he was trying to eradicate.
Right. Okay.
So, and all the time questioning his faith.
Right. Right. Okay.
So it's like, you know, giving that character emotion, it was interesting. Did several takes on some parts, and I'm, you know, really trying to, in my mind, thinking, okay, I'm this person, and what would I do if I were this person? So they all seemed very pleased with the result, and everyone who's seen has been like, yeah, you know, this really came off the way that, you know, better than we had anticipated. So that's always a good thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like it's another door that's opened. And then I saw the trailer for it, and it's got, you know, a lot of blood, a lot of monsters. And then I remember your voice, even though it's not in the trailer. And I go, yeah, I could see your voice in there, in the mix somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not too far.
Dark stories are seem to be my forte.
yeah, absolutely. Well, David, man, this has been great. A long time coming. I've been anticipating this, and I'm so glad we made this happen. I'm glad you're able to accommodate me with all the practicing and all the stuff that's going around.
As am I. And again, apologies for the fact that it took a little longer to get here, but you know, now you know why.
Oh, so. Yeah. Well worth the wait. And there was no pressure. It was like, when it's going to happen, it'll happen. This podcast that I'm doing, it's just going to keep going on. Please come back.
Would love to.
Yeah, this is great. And maybe we could do it face-to-face in Europe next time I see you, because that's the only time I get to see you now.
It is, and it apparently, according to your bandmates, is the only time that that you choose to drink.
So. yeah, it is.
Should I have said that?
No. I've said this to a few friends of mine. The only guy who can get me to do all that stuff is David Vincent, because I've done it.
I'm such a bad influence.
it's been great every time we hang out. I love it. Last time we saw each other was in Paris.
Yeah. We were playing the same night, and I think I made it over for your sound check.
Yeah, and I think we played a song, which was our new song at the time. I think you were the very first audience person ever to view that. I think we played it the first time that night.
And I remember liking it.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot for that. That boosted our confidence.
I didn't write the damn song. You did, so thanks to you.
Well, thanks a lot, man. Thanks for this, I swear.
Awesome. Well, we'll never be strangers, Danko. It's always good to talk to you, brother.